Yeah, and we could probably, and well, I guess that sub theme courses through the whole interview too.
Sure.
One other person that you met in New York City, in fact, that you studied with, who we mentioned during the introduction, is Ted Berrigan. We didn't get a chance to talk about your experiences with Ted, and I'm really fascinated with his work. And you know, there's something about when a person dies, there's just some aura about it. You know, Dizzy Gillespie certainly gets credit for bebop, but it's Charlie Parker who we think about, you know, because he died so young. And Ted died rather young.
48.
Yeah, and an amazing amazing heart that comes through his work. Tell us about Ted.
He was great. I mean, his house and Alice's house. I mean, I said studied just because it was a bio, and that was the way to put it. I mean, Ted did these workshops at St. Mark's where he would just kind of orate. You know, he would just sit down at a table and just talk about poetry, and there'd be like 50 of us sitting there. You know, I mean, it's amazing. And Alice had a smaller workshop where we went on Friday nights and we would just bring beers, and it was like a hot. We all like the younger scene of poets at that time. We all met at Alice's workshop, but the real scene was at their house, because once you met them, then you would go over to their house at 101 St. Mark's Place and just kind of hang out, you know. And so I'll never forget the night that I went to visit them. I remember, like, I had, you know, some pills and some beers and, you know, in my bag and stuff and some poems. And I just walked around the block and around the block and around the block. I was scared. It was like the date of a lifetime, you know. And finally went up and sat there and just didn't even know to leave, and just sat there for like 6 hours. And Ted lay on his bed, and Alice sat in the front room, and you'd have a conversation with Alice, and Ted would keep yelling things out from the bed, you know, and stuff. And then every now and then come into the bed and sit on the edge of the bed with Ted, and Ted would be like smoking a cigarette, and usually often with his shirt off, and the ash like hitting his belly slowly, repetitively over time. And then I'd hand my poem to Ted, and he would read it, and then we'd be like, hey, Alice, read this, and go into the other room, and you know. And all the time, you know, the kid, Anselm and Edmund, who, you know, guys now, were like in their like little bunk beds, you know, one room away, you know, with their dinosaur books. And it was such a scene. And every poet who, it was a very mishmash, it was a very mixed poetry world. Like Barry Watton would come to town, he would be there. Steve Abbott, you know, whoever, you know, it's just like their place had that salon atmosphere that was sort of, and half the time it's like they were broke, you'd bring some money, you know, we would all give what we, you know, there was like a temple atmosphere, you'd bring what you had, you know, and stuff. And often we were all broke, and we all had like books to sell and figuring out which books to sell. And there was a lot of exchange and talk and commerce and just sweetness. I mean, you knew as you stood there, it's like, just be here, and you know, just be here, because this is like really, this is your growing up, you know.
That's where it's happening. That's where the juice was.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Ted was funny. He was just like very direct. He could be very painful. He was very good at knowing what somebody's vulnerabilities were and just pushing you right there if he felt like doing it, you know. And then he was very gentle and very sweet with us, with his kids. Quick critic, you know, and was just really clear when he thought something was great, and generous, you know.
And his work, how would you describe, how are people going to remember his work?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of it. But the easiest thing to say, though, is that the sonnets, everybody knows, is a masterpiece. You know, I mean, I just feel like, I mean, if you write one book in your life that, like, is sort of, like, unforgettable and undyingly influential, I mean, I think it's the sonnets. I mean, all the other ones, too, it's sort of like work that he wrote before I met him and while he was, you know, while he was alive, was great, too. And, it you know, and Ted Talking, of course, was a great work. I mean, there's some book of interviews and conversations and talks that Ted gave, which were pretty amazing. But yeah, I think he was like a fan of poetry who turned into a master, like right out of his own fanship, you know, because it seems like the sonnets are such, you know, they're such like hot plastic work. You know, he was just like, you know, staying up all night and just like putting all of poetry together in a new way. And I love that he was influenced by his buddy Joe Brainard, and, you know, saw Joe's collages and said, I can do this in language. And I think there was a lot of contemporary, Maybe scorn is a hard word to use, but suspicion, because it was like, is he doing something new? I mean, he really took appropriation to the nth degree, you know, and I think that Ted knew that he could do it. And he was a triumph of class, because he was a really, you know, lower class to working class guy who grew up in a family with refrigerators on the lawn and stuff, and, you know, really kind of made himself, you know, was in the army and was a little older than the other poets that he came up with, and just was a little kind of big guy, a little bit out of it, and just yet full of kind of a wide charm, you know, that just resonated and still does.
We're talking with Eileen Miles, the visiting poet at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab for April 2002, and our honored guest for the 5th Annual Allen Ginsberg Memorial Open Mic Poetry Marathon. I'm Paul Nelson. I think it was in the book Post-Modern American Poetry, Paul Hoover's anthology, that described how you sometimes go hunting for a poem or feel like you're doing that. And maybe you could talk about that and how that process manifested in Skies. Maybe you could tell the story about how Skies became Skies. And that's your latest book, Skies, one of your latest, on Black Sparrow Press. So tell us about hunting.
Sure. I think I always was interested in the idea that a poem was a job in a way, and that you had to kind of go out and do it and go out and get it, which incidentally, I mean, like, again, Ted was sort of a master at discussing and you know, the role of the poet, you know, what was that? And clear with making it clear that each poet reinvents what that means, you know? So I think pretty early on, I realized that there was some real connection between my metabolism and the poem. And if I felt something and I didn't know what to do with that feeling, I could go out and find it. You know, and it's not so different from when I was a kid just coming home with piles of trash in my pockets. And, you know, I'd walk in the door, my mother would like make me empty out my pockets, and it'd be like half the world was in there. You know, I thought that was great. And I think I still do that, you know. And so Skies, very literally, accidentally, you know, I live in New York, and I lived in New York then, but I had a lover who bought a house in Provincetown, and we spent 4 years spending half the time, you know, on the tip of Cape Cod, which was great because I come from Massachusetts and I was drunk on the accent that I grew up on, you know, and suddenly I was in, so it was a really lively language connection, but the landscape was sensational. So what I would do was just take the dogs for these long walks and look up and be just almost freaked out by the sky. You know, we were often there off season, like in the fall and the winter, where it was this incredibly shifting thing that was purple and brown. And I never knew skies did so many things. And as a New Yorker who was used to, like, the sky being this kind of funnel, like this crack between buildings that I had watched shift and change for 25 years then, it was just like great and scary and erotic and organic. And so I've been writing about art as a, you know, one of the many gigs to support myself and love to do, and I've learned about just looking and describing art, because I didn't come from an art history background, so I just used my poethood to, like, you know look at paintings, and so I just turned that on the sky, and so just made it my job to, like, you know, notate what I saw and connect my current feelings or whatever other observations to it. And then I discovered, because I travel constantly, that I could drag this gig everywhere. It was sort of like a Linus blanket or something, this guy. And so I was here in the Northwest, so there's poems in this book from that. I'd be sitting outside of a reading at Mills College writing a poem about the sky, and they would make me come in and do my reading, and there's a little poem that does that. So it was just a great, and it was all, I was writing a novel called Cool for You, so it was kind of like the gig between the gig, you know, and so it was just like I had a way of knowing when I was writing a poem, I would just pop the sky in.
Well, there's a couple of poems then. There's the Mills College poem, if you could read, that'd be cool. And I guess there's a poem, untitled poem on page 35, I think it is, which will get us into another conversation point. But if you want to read those two, that would be great. And
I would love it.
Yeah.
It's so great. Often it was like, would you like to read a poem, Eileen? But you're like the guy on the radio show who knows which poem he wants to hear, which is, no, I'm loving it, actually. Yeah. It's very easy.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot to choose from, because your work is consistently excellent, but, you know, we only have a certain amount of time, and there's certain themes that I want to touch on. And the one on 35 is important.
Okay. So Jonathan's back from the country of Todd, and I'm back too. You get out of work on Irving Place, I mean everyone, at dusk in this long pause. And then the green eye, an old game board of lurches and howls. I should be so secure while I'm riding. I am. We deliver course. He's dead. Matthew Shepard's simply gone. Little scarecrow with his scarecrow desire. At Mills. The moon is so not a star. The sky is blue, a drop. I will come in and do my reading. Yes. Okay. Now.
Yeah. So the reference to Matthew Shepard, game man who was crucified in Laramie, Wyoming, is one. And so while you're writing about the sky, and the sky is the theme that sort of ties the poems together, the things that are going on in your life, thinking about that and everything else, like your pockets, it
right.
finds its way into your life and into your poems. Yeah.
It's, I mean, the mind is a big bank, you know, filled with deposits that everybody is making constantly, you know. And it's so, I mean, again, the sky was a very meditative vehicle for all that, because, as you know, if you sit and meditate, just all this garbage going by, you know. So I felt that I was doing my meditation in a very outward way, you know, like letting this blue screen be the place that held all the stuff careening in that sort of William Gibson space.
A lot of garbage going by, and a lot of that garbage is stuff that's intentionally put in our way so that we will buy products to consume.
Uh-huh.
And we're in a culture where we're bombarded with that, and especially if you're a TV watcher. It's just inundated, really,
right.
with complete garbage. And we were talking about Herbert Marcuse in the car, and how people have such a low sense of individuation that they don't really have their own individual consciousness, so it's like a blank screen that an advertisement is projected onto, or a TV sitcom mentality.
Right.
And Victor Hernandez Cruz says that the poets in this culture haven't been marginalized. It's the culture that has marginalized itself.
Uh-huh.
Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, no, I think people just get hammered with information. I mean, we all do. And it's like, what do you do with it? And I think the good fortune of being a poet is we have something to do with it, you know? And if you don't, and you just keep getting hammered, and then you're pushed out into the marketplace to find a way to survive in that, it's sort of like this, suddenly the space of available possibility, imagination just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks, and then government cutbacks on, you know, poets in the schools, all the ways that, I mean, like, we're an opportunity to expand, you know, and whether that opportunity is allowed to contact, you know, the young mind is, you know, American freedom.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break at this time and play a little music and come back with Eileen Miles, the visiting poet for Spring 2002 at the Northwest Spoken Word Lab in Auburn, Washington. Eileen is an amazing person, born in Cambridge, educated in Catholic schools, graduated from UMass. Her latest book is entitled Skies, and that's published by Black Sparrow Press. And you also have one other book that's entitled On My Way, and that's published by Faux Press.
Uh-huh.
And that's got a great essay that we'll talk about in our next segment.
Great.